You're listening to Radio Free Brooklyn. This is Burning Bridges with Margo. I'm your fire starter. Thanks for listening. We have a super amazing show. We have people on that you probably recognize, especially if you're in the tech scene. We have Robert Scoble and Shell Israel talking about their new book, The Fourth Transformation, Augmented Reality and Artificial Intelligence Change Everything. And Robert and Shell Israel, they have been researching, writing, and speaking about technology's impact on the near-term future together and separately since 2005. They are best known for two critically acclaimed best-selling tech business books, Naked Conversations in 2006, which demonstrated the business opportunities for social media, and Age of Context in 2012, which explained the convergence of mobile, social media, Internet of Things, data, location technologies would forever change the relationships between business and their customers. Robert Scoble is an entrepreneur in residence at Upload VR and among the world's best-known online tech journalists. And Shell Israel has written six previous books and has contributed to Forbes, Fast Company, and Business Week, just to name a few things they have done. Thank you, gentlemen, for being on my show. I appreciate it.
Thank you. I'm so glad we stole food together in Las Vegas.
Yeah, we were at Michael Turpin's party at CES, and apparently we were not supposed to be eating the food yet. But, you know, when you're a VIP, you just can do whatever you want, right?
That's true. And hungry people stick together everywhere.
That's true. If there's free food, you can count me in. I like to start off... I didn't really warn you guys about this, but I like to ask, is there a bridge that you burned in your life and you thought, oh, this is so terrible, and then...
I'm sorry. That's what we do for a living.
Awesome. And then it actually turns out to be a blessing in disguise. Do you guys want to give me an example, maybe, of how that's happened to you, whether in business or personal life?
Oh, well, Robert, you want to go first?
I've been thinking about, what's coming a lot. Soon, Apple is going to deliver mixed reality glasses, and Apple's not going to be alone magically. Microsoft has HoloLens, and they're betting their entire company on this new product line. Facebook just bought an eye sensor company, so they're working on glasses. Google just bought an eye sensor company that's in our book called iFluence, so they're working on glasses. Snap is working on glasses, and many in China are working on glasses. So in the next 18 months, we're going to see the encloaking of a new kind of computing device, and this is quite exciting.
Bridge we're burning in this case is the handset, which is the center of everyone's digital lives, and I bet a few of your audience people just said, wait a minute, you're not going to take my handset away from me, are you?
When you say handset, you mean phone, right?
You might have a virtual one in
the phone.
Your hand.
Yeah.
Yeah. The phone. We're talking about the phone. We're talking about your iPhone. We're talking about your Android device. You're going to be doing the stuff you're doing now with glasses on your nose and on your ears. And the handset will be there for a while, but more and more you'll be spending more time doing stuff with these devices, which will do everything you're doing now and a lot more.
Wait, why did Google Glass fail?
Be free.
I think we should set some context for what's going on, though, in the industry, because people are really confused when I talk to them. They hear VR is really cool and a lot of new things are coming in VR, and then they hear about augmented reality, which we wrote about both in our book, because augmented reality includes VR. And there's, I think, multiple levels. So you can start out with a Google Cardboard. You put your phone in, and now you can watch a little film in 360 degrees, right, and that are being captured by these new cameras, and play some lightweight VR. And then you can go up to a mobile-based VR, like a Samsung Gear VR, where you put your phone in a better headset. Now you can wear it for maybe an hour instead of just using it for 10 or 15 minutes. And then you can go all the way up to the third level, which is 6 degrees of freedom VR headsets like the HTC Vive or the Oculus Rift or the Sony PlayStation VR. And those let you move around, and they are absolutely mind-blowing when you put people in for the first time. They have no idea how interesting they are, both from a gaming perspective, but a movie perspective, to working, right? Ford uses VR to design new cars. Disney used VR to design its new theme park. And then to add more confusion on, there's a whole range of new headsets coming that are, I call mixed reality, although you could call them next generation augmented reality, like the Microsoft HoloLens or Magic Leap or ODG or the stuff that's coming out from Apple this year. And those put virtual images on top of the real world, and then they also let you do play VR. So a lot of fun stuff is coming this year that is absolutely mind-blowing, but as when any new category shows up, people are confused about when do you buy, what do you buy, what is it for, et cetera, et cetera, and that's what our book's for.
So what is AI? Like, what's the difference between AI, VR, and mixed?
Mixed is next generation augmented reality. So it's augmented reality, but it's mapped to your physical space around you. So you have little, like in the Microsoft HoloLens, I have a game called Fragments. And Fragments maps out your room, like your living room, and then puts a murder right in the living room. And it puts information about that murder on all surfaces of your room. And there's little virtual rats that are walking around the floor. It's mind-blowing what's coming. And then you move down. So that's mixed reality. Microsoft calls it mixed reality or next generation augmented reality. It's brand new. Most people haven't seen it. Microsoft just yesterday announced that they've only sold a few thousand of these headsets because they're too big, they're too ugly, and they're too heavy for consumers, and they're way too expensive for consumers. But by the end of this year, you're going to see 4-ounce to 2-ounce glasses that do the same thing for around $500 instead of $3,000, and they'll be really small and really light. And that's when the fun really begins.
And why did Google Glass fail? Because it sounds like in your book, like, we're eventually going to be wearing glasses all the time that do, you know,
yeah,
cool things.
And we should separate. Google Glass is not even augmented reality. It's a little screen that was up in the corner of your eye that would show you notifications coming in, or if you're walking around New York, it would show you which way to turn when you're walking around, stuff like that. It did not lay virtual stuff on top of the real world. So the glasses that are coming are absolutely mind-blowing, and Google Glass was not mind-blowing. And then I spend the whole hour talking about Google Glass, but I won't. It was a bad product, yeah, and it was too early. But go ahead, Shel.
I would add just that it failed in terms of people didn't go down to their local Best Buy and spend $1,500 for something that was this piss poor. But what it did do is open the eyes of the development community to possibilities, and great possibilities, which have now are coming in not only from developers with dreams, but from companies that include Apple and Google and Facebook, Amazon, Microsoft, the largest and most powerful companies in the world. Others that are playing, the Chinese big companies, Alibaba is in this space. So what you have is Google Glass, to me, was a trigger point. There were things before that you didn't hear about. Boeing was using virtual reality to design the inside of the Boeing 747 wing in 1993. But after Google Glass, the technology community saw what was possible, and since then have been investing time, money, and dreams in making them happen.
Are these companies going to open up their platforms so developers can build, I don't know what you would even call them, apps or dApps or things for the different headsets?
Robert, that's yours again.
Yep. Yeah. Because And all of these platforms are already working with Hollywood. That's why I just went to Sundance, to get the Hollywood to create content for these glasses. Because if you get these glasses for $500 and there's no movies and there's no sports and there's no you know, fun things to do with them in a shopping mall or in a sporting event or walking around town, you're not going to wear them and you're going to get bored with them really fast and probably you won't even buy them, right? So Apple is certainly going to work on this, and I believe this is why Apple will uncloak what they're doing in June at its developer conference, because it needs to explain how to build new 3D apps on top of a new 3D map, which will let you do these kinds of experiences where there's virtual stuff on all your walls and all your floors and on the streets around town when you're walking around, right?
Wow. So when do you think Apple's going to have this out?
I believe that Apple is going to announce in June. It might be September, but June is where I'm aiming at because that's the 10th anniversary of the iPhone, and it's also when they have their big developer conference, and they need to tell developers about this first. They need developers on board to build software and experiences for new devices like glasses and mixed reality phones and mixed reality iPads and mixed reality TVs. Apple is announcing more new products in the next year than they have ever announced in their history, certainly more new technologies. And just an example, they have 600 engineers working on just the 3D sensor alone in the new iPhone and the new glasses and the new TV. So I expect a big bang from Apple, and that's going to wake everybody up to what Shell and I wrote about in this book, Fourth Transformation.
Wow, and Apple's notoriously very, very secretive, so you got that information somehow.
You know, part of it, doing this book with Shell, is we went around the world talking, visiting R&D labs, going to startups. I interviewed Matteo's CTO in 2011, which led to the development of this book. And he tells you what he's building. And he showed me monsters on the sides of skyscrapers in Munich, Germany, where they were, or in Germany, where their headquarters was. And that was in 2011. And then Apple bought that company. So watch what he does now. If he could do monsters on skyscrapers back then, I believe he's going to blow up an entire city with aliens looking through these glasses. Shell, do you have anything to add here?
Yeah, just explaining that when Robert talks about Apple, Apple is not as good as keeping secrets as it once was, because it needs to work on a massive scale with many of the smartest people in the world, at least in terms of technology. Among the people that Robert mentions is there are companies that when they were not owned by Apple were very public about what they were doing. And you can lay over what Robert got from Matteo when it was a private company eager for attention and lay on top of that that's basically the group at Apple that has the 600 developers working, and you can figure out what's going on there. You can look at patents and figure out what Apple is up to. You can look at the statements that Tim Cook has made. You can say 2 + 2 + 2 = 4, and then Robert keeps having dinners with people who just love to talk a little bit, and then Robert and I connect the dots and make predictions. Outlandish predictions about what Apple is up to.
Yeah, I remember hearing about Leap at least 2013. There was like a video about Leap. It might have been even earlier than that.
You mean Magic Leap?
Yeah, but were they just going by Leap before?
Yeah, Magic Leap. Not to my knowledge, Robert.
I didn't hear the question, I'm sorry.
Oh, I really thought I heard about the Leap technology, but I guess it's called Magic Leap. But in 2013, there was like a video about it, and people were...
There's two companies. There's one called Leap, which is doing a 3D sensor for your phone.
Yeah.
And I don't believe that's going to be a major player, because the 3D sensor is going to be built into your phone soon when Apple builds it. there's a company called Magic Leap, which got $1.4 billion, and that's included in our book. And they're building mixed reality glasses like Microsoft HoloLens or these things that are coming out from Apple. And I hear they're going to be pretty cool and pretty interesting as well. But for now, Apple is going to be the big bang.
So is there just one more generation?
We've got a lot of attention. Google and Alibaba put a whole mess of money into Magic Leap 2 years ago, actually. And then they came up with a fabulous demo of a whale leaping out of a gymnasium floor, which some of your listeners may have seen. And now there's a lot of talk that that was not actually their technology they used to develop that awesome demo. And now Magic Leap is talking an awful lot about coming out just for products in the healthcare industry, at least according to a couple of reports that came out yesterday and this morning.
Oh, yeah, you talk about in the book about surgery and things like that, that this is going to really help change. That was really interesting.
Yeah. Case Western is now using HoloLens technology for anatomy students who are going to become surgeons. And they're now learning what healthy living organisms inside a living body look like, which is much better than learning how to operate on you or someone you love with a cadaver that's been in a refrigerator for 2 months. So that's just one way. A guy, I forgot, Dusan, I think the name of the company is, a French company with facilities in Massachusetts. He designed a virtual reality tour through a living, healthy heart. And now doctors, he did this because he had a daughter born 25 years ago who did not have a healthy heart. She had a congenital defect. And he designed the system where doctors can now tour a living heart and compare it with the heart of the patient to see where the defects are. And this kind of stuff is just a couple of the examples. In healthcare, MindMed is a company also to receive over $1 billion. It's located in Switzerland. They make games with this top-heavy device that has a fishnet over your head. And that's cool only because they're actually operating not with hand or voice controls, but with brainwaves. And the same technology is being used by MindMaze in healthcare to cure or treat schizophrenia, Parkinson's disease, limb loss trauma, stroke recovery, just about every one of the world's great brain-related deficiencies, with the exception of Alzheimer's, which they say is too complex for their current level of technology. So healthcare is a place where there's going to be really remarkable change on every level, as is true in retail, in education, and so on down the line.
I really want Shazam for people. You know when you forget someone's name and you're like, oh, who is that?
Shazam was Captain Marvel, Strength of Solomon.
Well, I just mean where you like don't know Shazam who someone is. Oh, what?
Shazam for people is certainly coming, but Shazam for everything is coming. And that's the AI part of our book, the artificial intelligence. Because these sensors are going to look at the table that you're sitting in front of, and it's going to know that there's a Coke can on the table, and it's separate from the table, and the table is a table, and it's separate from the floor, right? And now it can lay new kinds of games, new kinds of experiences on all those surfaces, and that's exactly what HoloLens does. When you play fragments in HoloLens, you see a murder happen right in your room, and you can walk around the murder, and you can see stuff on all the surfaces of your room. A separate game in HoloLens has aliens shooting holes in your walls and then drilling through, and then you have to shoot them with your hands before they get to you, right? This is mind-blowing technology and mind-blowing experiences that are coming.
But you keep blowing away aliens and creating murders, Robert. You're turning very violent.
Violence is a good way to grab people's attention. It's, yes, you're going to use Microsoft Word in the same technologies, but it's a little less exciting to talk about, oh, you're going to type in a virtual screen in the air.
But we write together because we disagree on almost everything. If you flip over the copy of the book that you have, you'll see him hitting me with a virtual boxing glove. And the only thing inaccurate about that is he sometimes hits me lower than on the jaw. I think it's really important that people understand that while games and entertainment is what is getting the headlines and producing the really great videos, that virtual reality is going to be more a part of our everyday lives, of our work, of our learning, than the phone is today. This isn't science fiction. This is happening very soon. I would argue in less than 10 years. Robert would argue even sooner than that.
Like less than a year. Shell and I visited many R&D labs, including Sephora, which is building augmented reality or mixed reality makeup, which I'll walk up to you with my glasses and see your virtual makeup. And in fact, you can already get an example of this on your iPhone or Android phone. Download the Sephora app, and you aim the phone at your face, and now you can try on virtual makeup right on your face. Right? And the virtual makeup is matched to the physical product that you will buy in the store, so it will look the same when you get put on physical makeup, right? And I believe that's a deep marketing lesson for every brand, that they're going to have to build virtual components to their brand and products as well as physical components, right? You're still going to need a car. You're still going to need a place to live. You're still going to need experiences at dinner and stuff like that. And I believe you're going to see virtualized menus, virtualized cars, which will have fantastic new designs on them. You're going to see clothes that both have something you can wear, right, because you still need to do that, as well as virtual clothes that are going to spring off of that. And maybe your shirt has a video on it or something like that. We're going to see some magical things in terms of business and being able to design and do work together with people in 3D space in these glasses, and it's going to be a fun year. Or
the very nature of marketing is going to change because of this stuff. You're going to arrive at a shopping mall, and you're going to ask your device to show you where all the blue jeans are, and then you'll select from these stores. You'll know. Your device will know your sizes, so they'll know what's in inventory and what stores have your sizes. And then a celebrity or a luminary or person out of history of your personal preference will then escort you to the jeans you want. And once you, as you pass by somewhere else, the luminary, your VR companion, will point out that there are belts or a purse or shoes that go so nicely with the jeans that you're about to buy.
Do we even need to go to stores, though?
Everything you're doing is, did you say creepy?
No, do we even need to go to stores, then? Can we just do it from our living room?
I don't need to. I think it's human nature to want to shop. Go ahead, Robert.
I agree. Most people still want to touch things and see things. And it's a social experience to go to the mall with your friends, right? So malls are not going away completely. We might need fewer of them. We might need fewer stores because many of the things you can buy in your life, you can buy at home, right? I have an Amazon Echo in my kitchen, and I can tell it, hey, Alexa, and I'd probably just turn on everybody's Alexa machine playing on their speakers. You buy me toilet paper, and 2 days later, a bundle of toilet paper arrives, right? And so why do I need to go to the store for that kind of good or groceries? I can see a lot of people buying online a lot of things, but jeans are very particular to us, and we want to touch them, we want to try them on, and as good as virtual try-on will be, it still is better to try on the physical good.
There's a lot of talk about the dehumanization of technology. Robert and I got to where we're getting because we wrote a book about early social media. And at that time, everybody said, well, everybody's just going to sit around at home. They're going to be isolated. We're going to dehumanize the conversation. And exactly the opposite has happened. When I get to I don't travel as much as Robert, but I do get to go all over the world a bit. And very often there'll be somebody in an audience I've never seen before, never spoken to before, but we look at each other, there's eyes of revelation because we've seen each other online, and then we're hugging an old friend for the very first time. This dynamic is something to do with the human animal, just like storytelling is part something to do with the human brain. It's primal, and we need to socially shop. We need to go out. We need to touch and feel. If virtual and augmented take over entertainment, which it very likely could be, I still envision people sitting in theaters even if they're wearing headsets because of the dynamic of going to, even today, let's leave VR and AR out of it. We go to movies when we can probably see the same film, that's a bad word too, the same video, 2 weeks from now at home on our TV screens. But I still like to go. I still like to eat bad popcorn. I like to hear other people laugh. I like to hear the applause at the end of the last movie I saw was Hidden Figures. And at the end of it, everybody in the audience applauded, and that kind of choked me up because that was how I felt about the film. So this idea that we're just going to do it all online isn't true. I haven't seen recent figures, and certainly Amazon and other online retailers have hurt certain, very specifically, certain retailers. But so far, the numbers show that most people still buy most of their stuff by going out, walking through a line, paying. Most people don't even use frictionless payment systems. They still hand over a credit card to a cashier.
Yeah. You mentioned the humanizing aspect, and you guys don't talk about this really in your book, but how do you think this is going to affect journalism?
Oh, God.
I'll take that on. Phil, I'll take that on.
Go ahead. You can take the first shot at this.
At Sundance, I was using. I was hanging out with Nokia, who has a $45,000 professional and 360-degree 3D VR camera, and we shot the protests. And it's a very effective way of doing journalism of that kind because you see the context and you get present. It feels like you're there. And that is a feeling that you cannot get with old-style TV. You can only get it with immersive media like augmented reality or virtual reality. And it's very effective as a journalism tool. I mean, if I see a building burning down, I'm setting up a 360 camera. If I'm in the middle of a protest or a news event like that, I'm setting up a 360 camera. And in fact, this year, Facebook is going to turn on live 360. Twitter and Periscope have already turned it on for some people. So this is a war over the future of how you bring people to things. And it won't just be journalism. It'll be music events. It'll be plays. It'll be all sorts of things that you can experience in these new glasses in a whole new way than you could watching it on TV.
I'm looking at apartments, and I wish they had that now.
I never really say these words, but I completely agree with Robert. There is another aspect of what's going on, which is we live in a world now where everybody is a journalist. Every company that posts anything anywhere on the internet is a publisher. The great news stories of recent years that pop out of my mind involve citizen journalism, people with cell phones taking pictures of police brutality. acts of police brutality that most people wouldn't have believed if they didn't keep seeing it repeatedly. We've had news stories break about the igniting of Arab Spring. We've had it goes everywhere because we are now, all of us, being equipped with a tool that allows us to report to others what we see in real time. And the tools that we are going to, from the handset to the headset, are even better than the ones we have now. Are faster to start reporting on, are just better in every way. So there is both technology and the social phenomenon. In the last few weeks, we've been hearing about fake news and all sorts of things that bring us into the dreaded area of politics. But the truth of the matter is that the traditional news gathering machines, from the New York Times that I still read religiously to some of the old tabloids, are being outdone in speed, in circulation, in distribution by the new technologies, and that just isn't going to change.
You don't think that publishers are going to start creating content for VR?
Oh, God, that's very funny, because right now we're going through a situation where, in my view, the media did a piss-poor job in the last political contest. That's the only thing I'm going to say about the last political contest. But now they are turning, because of the issue of fake news, I've seen ads by Barron's, by Forbes, by the New York Times, and other major branded publications on Facebook asking you to support the press by buying paid circulations. They're doing it on Facebook, which is where all the sponsorship went, where all the eyeballs went, where all the readers went. And when you start forwarding that into younger generations, you're just not going to bring them back. I'm a product of journalism. I am a journalist. I was trained as a journalist. I have a bachelor's degree. I have a master's degree in journalism. If the technology hadn't started changing it back in the days when the linotype operators got laid off in the early 60s, if all of that hadn't happened, I would have lived my life very happily as a journalist, reporting on news in your community or in Washington, D.C., or in a battlefront in all the other places. But the technology is making the business of traditional publishing obsolete. Robert and I are self-publishers. We had two very good publishers earlier in our careers, but it is more efficient, faster, and far more economically beneficial to us to self-publish. How do we market it? We go to Facebook and we talk a lot.
We just had this whole situation of how big the crowd size was at the inauguration, and if we had these 360 cameras, then people would have been able to see actually how many people were there. Do you think this is something, this new technology is something the new administration is probably not going to be really in favor of, since it shows what's accurate?
I don't speak for the new administration ever.
Yeah.
Sorry.
I think it's too early to understand where Trump is going to go with his response to Silicon Valley and where we're going.
Robert, you owe me a dollar. Yep. You said that name. You owe me a dollar.
Yeah, we have a game every time we talk about. But anyway, we need to see more time. Some things he's going to like, some things he's not. But if he destroys Silicon Valley, he really hurts America. And I don't think he's about that. He's about jobs at one level, and he's about tearing down social rules and regulation at another. I think this is why some of the executives in Silicon Valley are actually interested in Trump, because they're going to make business easier at some level, including things like self-driving cars and glasses.
You mentioned in the book that there are probably going to be some jobs lost because of this new technology. Where should people kind of be looking towards in Future-wise.
AI is the... And these technologies are really coming out of two places, the mixed reality glasses places and the self-driving car. And the technologies that drive both are very, very similar. They are augmented... artificial intelligence that sees the world and makes decisions. And self-driving cars in about 7 years is going to start doing away with a lot of jobs. Truck drivers, for instance, is the number one career in America. There's 1.3 million people who have that career, and they need to know that in 10 years, their jobs are going to start going away, if not sooner. And we need to find an answer to that, or we're going, in Silicon Valley, we're going to hear a massive backlash. I believe mixed reality offers that chance of having an answer, because mixed reality glasses are the best education technology humans have ever invented. We're using mixed reality glasses at Caterpillar, for instance, to train people how to fix a million-dollar tractor in real time while they're doing the job. So you don't go into a classroom. You just get the glasses and you go to work, and it teaches you new things. This is going to help get people out of jobs that are hurt by automation, and there will be a raft of them, into newer kinds of jobs that we still need humans for.
So do you think there's just going to be one more iteration?
I'll go with that.
Oh, go ahead, Shell.
No, Shell just said I agreed with
that. Oh, okay. There's another agreement.
it's right there. Right there, it's newsworthy. Just one little add-on. In John Markoff's recent book, Machines of Loving Grace, which was about artificial intelligence, which we certainly cover in our book to some degree, he said that 2018 or 19 will be the first year in history where digital technology reduces the number of jobs rather than increases it. He said that it was not clear whether that was the beginning of an unstoppable trend, as some people have said it will be, or it would be something, or it was just going to be a short period. I believe that right now there's a desire to replace jobs, restore jobs that once thrived and no longer do. NPR has been doing a series on Erie, Pennsylvania, where they expect the new administration to restore jobs in furniture making, screen doors, storm windows. And I think that's as likely to happen as the restoration of jobs for the village blacksmith. Technology moves on. People move on. What was a phenomenal, mind-boggling innovation yesterday is so what today. This is the history of the human animal since the cave. I think that new jobs will come because people need to figure out something to do with their time. And until we get to that situation, the entrepreneurs of tomorrow won't be inspired to come up with the ideas they will. But like storytelling, again, the nature of humans is to find new ways to be enterprising, to be new entrepreneurs and new eras based on the technology and the other tools of their time. So I think the issue of jobs is really hard to answer until we get to the point where the jobs really are disappearing. So far in the last 10 years, we've added jobs, not lost jobs. And that's probably at risk right now, but I'm not sure how it's going to come out with jobs, but I don't think too many former assembly line workers or coal workers really want their kids to be on assembly lines or mine coal.
Yeah. Would you say there's just one more major iteration of the phone that's going to come out, and then it's all the focus is just going to switch to glasses?
I'll take that, Shell.
Yeah, sure. But
coming this year from Apple in June are a complete set of new products, a new set of iPhones, there's going to be three, a new iPad, a new TV product, and a new pair of glasses and a new 3D map. This is coming out of conversations that Steve Jobs and Tim Cook had 7 years ago about the future of television. Your new iPhone is going to be a mixed reality iPhone. It will show you virtual things on top of the real world, things like Pokemon running around the streets. So you'll just hold up your phone and you'll see Pokemon. You get a taste of that today in current iPhones, but the stuff that's coming is mind-blowing compared to what we have in our pockets today. And we're getting it this year. This year, a big change in the tech industry is hitting, and that's what our book is all about. It's the formation of devices that put virtual things on top of the real world. And that's what the new phones will do.
So buy Apple stock.
We are poor, starving writers, and therefore we cannot make forward-looking stocks until after we contact Schwab ourselves.
But I told people to buy NVIDIA a year ago because they are the foundation
yep.
Of these technologies.
And I thank you for that, Robert. And I thank you for that, Robert. I've done better with my NVIDIA than I have with the book so far, and I appreciate that, Robert.
I believe Apple.
Thing.
Go ahead.
Robert, I've heard you make the statement about every product changing this year from Apple. I noticed that you didn't mention desktop computers.
No, they're dead.
That is the point. And when they die, there's nobody whimpering about it because they just kind of trickle off. They just stop becoming important.
Well,
you know,
when I say they're dead, you're going to wear a pair of glasses and you're going to have virtualized computers in them. You're going to have your screen. I have a HoloLens at home, okay? I'm one of the few thousand people that have this already. And I have 5 virtual screens on my desk. And I have a Bluetooth keyboard. And now I can work on any of those virtualized screens. And it's a full Windows computer on my face, right? So I have Windows on my face. I have a full computer on my face that can virtualize anything, right? So you're not going to buy screens. You're not going to buy laptops or desktop computers in the future. You're just going to wear glasses.
If I write another book, I'm going to write it with my eyes moving in glasses. We've seen that technology in a prototype form. It's not ready yet, but it will be soon.
And Google bought that company. That's Jim Marggraf at Apple, at iFluence. And iFluence went to Google. There's a similar company called iTribe in Copenhagen that I visited. That went to Facebook. So you can see the investments in these products is immense. Apple alone has spent many billions of dollars buying companies, building things. They have 600 engineers just working on the 3D sensor. So I'm sure there's 600 people working on the glasses and 600 people working on other things, right? The investments that this industry is making is unbelievable. It's the biggest of my life by far. And it's because we're living in an exponential world. This stuff just keeps getting more and more important as it doubles or halves in size. Right now, we just came back from CES, the Consumer Electronics Show, and we visited Qualcomm, which is being used in the ODD glasses. And they just shipped 10 nanometers. And just a week ago, I sat next to a manager at Applied Materials who makes the tools that make these silicon chips. And he says, well, we're getting 7 nanometers next year. So you can see how fast things are shrinking. That allowed ODG to make a much smaller glass than it had previously.
Maybe we'll get to contact soon because I'm more of a contact person.
I didn't hear you.
You talked over her, and I didn't hear you.
Oh, I was just saying, like, maybe we'll get to contact as opposed to glasses sooner because more of a contact person.
I don't believe that. I don't believe that to be true, at least not in the next decade. After that, maybe. But the shrinkage, the computing power needed is still too big for it to be on the surface of your eyes.
Did you guys interview
battery and?
Oh, sorry. Continue.
Go ahead.
10 years from now, that might be different, but I think we're a long ways away from real context beyond just showing something in an R&D lab. Yep.
Cool. I was wondering if you guys interviewed the authors of Back to the Future 2, because I feel like a lot of things they predicted are coming true.
I have not, but I did talk to the screenwriter of Minority Report, who now works at Salesforce, and he saw some of these things happening a decade before they happened, and wrote a screenplay that changed our lives. Yeah.
I'm a sci-fi. I grew up on sci-fi, and there is nothing that I'm seeing coming out now that wasn't written about by the likes of Isaac Asimov, Ray Bradbury, Arthur C. Clarke. All of this stuff has been written about, talked about by Jules Verne, by H.G. Wells. The works of the human mind begin with storytellers and fiction. These are read by children who start growing up saying, wow, wouldn't it be nice if after reading From the Earth to the Moon, that Jules Verne wrote, I could actually go from the Earth to the Moon. And some of those kids who thought that ended up at NASA. That's how it happened. So Back to the Future is one movie. It's kind of cool. Time travel is something I don't know of anybody who's actually working on it. But the ideas that come from fiction become tomorrow's reality. Now, tomorrow's reality may be virtual, it may be mixed, it may be augmented, or it may be touch and feel. But first we get the ideas, and then we make them happen through technology. And that, to me, is the core of the history of the world, and will continue to be.
I like to think of what are some...
That's I promise not to get that lofty again, I promise.
No, that's great, because it goes with... When I think of those books, I think of some of the negative things that could happen. And so I like to think about what are some positive things that could come out of this new technology that's going to be very much embedded in our lives. And my first thought was charities and raising money.
I'll take that, Robert.
Okay.
For hundreds of years, we've been hearing there are some things, Dr. Frankenstein, that man should not invent. It was sexist back then. Now we would say humankind should not invent. But the truth of the matter is we keep on inventing, and there are side effects, and sometimes people die. We invented cars, and look at all the problems that solved. The fact is that we're going to invent it because we can, and history says that so far it's always turned out on the plus side, even though there are minuses. Okay, Robert, I'm done.
Nope, I don't have anything to add.
Well, maybe with raising money in charities and being able to see what you would be giving money to or what the situation is and having that kind of tug more at your heartstrings because it's right in front of your face opposed to just hearing about it.
Yeah, Oculus, Facebook and Oculus at Sundance, or Oculus is Facebook because Oculus is owned by Facebook, but Oculus had a major house at Sundance, and they were showing off VR for Good and talking about that. And Noni De La Pena, who was one of the people in the room when Oculus Rift was invented, is now building a company around that. She built a VR experience where a kid who was gay recorded his parents being really bad parents to him, and she built a whole VR experience around that to build empathy for the child and showed it off at Sundance. That was very powerful.
That is amazing.
Wow. I haven't heard that one.
That's so cool because I had Dr. Lana Connor on here, who's head of Stanford's Social Psychology Answers for Real World Problems. And there's a study of trans rights of people saying, no, they shouldn't have rights. And then they made them imagine if they were. But with this technology, people could really actually imagine that they were. Because once they did that, they changed their mind on whether or not they should have rights. So interesting.
Another evidence of this was a VR experience by Chris Milk. He started a company called Within, and his new I don't even know what to call these things yet. VR experience let you fly from being a baby or an egg, really, all the way through your life. And as you went through these, he would put you into different characters, a bird, an ape, and others. And within, I watched a lot of people play this, and within a few seconds, people figured out what they were, in other words, a bird, and started flying and flapping their wings to fly. And it's a lot of fun, but it shows that you can empathize with a new character, and you can even take on the attributes of that character, the personality of that character, because you heard your voice change when you got into this character. You saw your arms have wings all of a sudden. You have that you're thrown off of a cliff, and you're flying, and you have to figure out how to fly. So imagine being in the space of that child whose parents were, religious and pretty bad, and now you really empathize with that character, and you feel the pain that child felt, because he actually was smart enough to turn on his iPhone and record his parents being assholes. I'm sorry, I don't know if I can say that on the show.
Yeah, you can.
and it, the word fits. In journalism school, we learn we can swear if the word fits. And that really did fit there. And you really feel that when you watch that film.
Wow, that's really interesting. That's definitely a very positive way that this technology can take us. Because you guys sort of mentioned a little bit of what could possibly go wrong in the book.
That's the name of our chapter.
Yeah.
What could possibly go wrong? Well, a whole lot can go wrong, and probably will. Will this stuff unemploy some people? Yes. Will some people die when something weird happens in what we think is a perfectly safe autonomous car? Yeah, that's probably going to happen again. It's happened once so far. But most people will not die. They will not suffer. They will not become unemployed. They will become better educated. They will be able to deal with pain better. They will be able to learn faster and more enjoyably. They will be able to socialize better. They will be able to understand what it was really like to be at the Battle of Hastings rather than just know the date was 1066, as is all I know from the way I was educated. It goes on, we will be healed better. So, yes, there is bad stuff that will happen, because through history, bad stuff has continued to happen and will continue to happen. But any thought of don't go forward, it's just very hard for me to understand. We're humans are the only creature that just can't stop going forward. That's what we will do. And so far, it's worked out pretty damn well.
I wonder how this is going to affect dating, like online dating and stuff like that. Tinder had like a joke when at CES about it.
There's a lot that it will affect, because if you walk in a room, first of all, everybody who is available to date might be green, right? If you give the system permission to show people that. I mean, we sort of figured that out anyways in real life. We look for wedding rings and stuff like that, and there's ways to signal to people that you're open for dating. And you're certainly using apps like, Tinder and whatnot to date today. Tomorrow, you're going to get a lot more information when you're talking to people, and you're going to be able to play in virtual spaces for a while and see if you can get along with that person before you even meeting them for coffee, right?
When we visited Meta for the first time, Meta makes AR headsets, which are very, very promising for the future. It's a company we both like a good deal. I asked the founder of that company if a teenage boy who is lonely and shy could have a virtual girlfriend using existing haptic technology, which lets you feel. Robert felt ghosts go through him when he did The Void in New York City. Would that boy be able to create the girl of his dreams and spend his time with her? He said, yes. I said, would it be such a good relationship that he may not want a real girlfriend? And he said, yes. And if you play that through, that could be the end of human population increases. I don't know how that turns out. I have a feeling that we're not going to stop making children with each other rather than having our relationships with virtual playmates. But the technology is going to change that aspect of our lives, too. In our title, I'm a journalist, so I very rarely say everything. I avoid absolutes. But in this case, we said the technology is going to change everything, and we meant it.
What are you guys most excited about?
For me, education, because that offers the opportunity for fixing the jobs problem as well as fixing America. Because when you hand somebody a pair of glasses and say, here, go to learn, this is a new kind of school system that will bring people into the modern world. And there are lots of jobs on the other side of the modern world. I visited a company in Illinois called Agrible, and their company could not exist 3 years ago. It grows virtual crops, which I'm sure some of your listeners might say, "What are you smoking any of the real stuff?" and he does that, Agrible does that, by analyzing the data that's coming off of the combines, off of the Internet of Things sensors that are in the farms, the real farms, off of the Doppler radars, the satellite data, the farm price data that's coming off the government feeds. It analyzes that, grows a virtual crop, predicts what the real crop will do over the next couple months, and then sells that data back to the farmer and says, hey, on plot A, B, you should fertilize and whatnot. This company already has more than 100 employees and is brand new. So there's jobs. But they're very skilled jobs. They require people to be data scientists, computer scientists, and other technical degrees. And we need to educate people to get those jobs. And that means putting these glasses on for 4 years to get to the skill level that these companies do need. And there's thousands and millions of jobs like this coming. But we need people to get smarter. And that's a big problem in America because our education system was built to get people to put screws into metal on a machine line and show up to work and all that. This is a new kind of job that didn't exist 3 years ago, and we need new skills. That means a new kind of education, and mixed reality glasses are coming to do that.
I completely agree, completely.
Awesome. And so timeline, just like once again, coming up June, we're going to hear from Apple. And then within the next 5 years, you think phones are going to be dead?
Go ahead, Robert.
I'm not using a phone within 18 months. Although a phone, it's funny you say phone. A phone might be in my pocket, which then gets transmitted to my glasses. So I'm not sure that I'm completely into just glasses world in 18 months. That might be 4 years away. But I'm not looking at my phone very often in 18 months.
The death of things doesn't matter. Companies can linger for years. Sears was once one of the most important companies in retailing in the world. It's still around, but it doesn't matter. Apple may not do anything more with desktop or laptop computers. It doesn't mean they'll die. I'll probably continue to use a desktop computer in many ways because it is my habit. But the center of my digital life is now my phone. The center of my digital life 5 years from now will be in glasses.
Awesome.
So,
blacksmith
is going around.
Yeah. Well, you guys have been amazing. I'm sorry to cut you short. Thank you for being on Burning Bridges with Margo on Radio Free Brooklyn. You guys are awesome. Appreciate it.